Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Chris Evans here, and welcome along to the latest edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, Hollywood's very own Lucy Boynton gives us the lowdown on the TV adaptation of Agatha Christie's Why Didn't They Ask Evans? Star of stage and screen, Bertie Carvel, tells us about playing Donald Trump in his latest show, The 47th, at the Old Vic Theatre in London. Cracking comedian Patrick Kilty is back with a brand new UK tour, dropping in to talk to us about Borderline. And the lovely lead singer of Train, Pat Monahan, could not have been nicer about the show. Just listen to it for that. And also, he played as his brand new single, AM Gold, the title track from the forthcoming brand new Train album. All of that and so much more to come. So, Dapper Dave, who is first?
From Bohemian Rhapsody to the Ipcress File, if it's decent, she's more than likely in it. The new series, Why Didn't They Ask Evans, starts next Thursday on BritBox. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome an actress here to be asked some questions by Evans. It's Lucy Boynton!
All right, Lucy!
Hello!
How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Congratulations. This show is awesome.
Thank you.
It's really, really cool.
Thank you.
And you found yourself working with one of your heroes. Well, many of your heroes, actually, but one particularly behind the camera, the amazing Hugh Laurie.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, it's just a dream from beginning to end. And I mean, I think as soon as you realise or read that Hugh Laurie is attached to something, you know it's guaranteed a certain level of quality. But then actually working with him kind of surpassed all expectations. He cares so much about everyone's experience and the characters themselves. So it was just beautiful.
We get to see him a bit, don't we?
But
he's
we do.
He's mostly behind the camera. He adapted the screenplay, of course.
He did.
It's a very famous Agatha Christie novel, a murder mystery. Why Didn't They Ask Evans? Nothing to do with me, by the way.
Sure. Disclaimer.
Innocent, Your Honour. Absolutely. But Hugh, I mean, what a wealth of experience he brings. Did you ask him about his time in America?
I didn't so much.
Because he was house, wasn't he, for
of course.
7 years?
But you get kind of, I think, self-conscious about interrogating someone with that level of experience and expertise.
I don't.
Great. I mean, yes, no. As you shouldn't. I do, I should say. But no, and it was just such a joy to be unraveling this book, this story, these characters with him. So it was kind of just, you know, dissecting it all with him and grilling him on his kind of expertise.
What kind of things does he say to you from behind the camera? How does he help? How as a director?
Well, I think as an actor, you just have such a different kind of perspective. And so he really comes at it from the center rather than the outside in, so he really knows the emotional track of the characters. And one of the first things he told me was that Frankie, my character, was his childhood crush.
Really?
So he has a kind of insight into
a literary crush. See, he's cool, isn't he? That's such a cool thing to say. To fall in love with characters
superior.
In a book. I know. You know, he's an amazing musician as well. He came on the show once because he had an album out. And
He does everything. He excels
very
at
annoying.
Everything.
And what's really annoying about him, he's a really nice person.
He's an incredibly kind person.
How does he do all this, Lucy?
I know. That Hugh Laurie.
But he's not the only magic that you're surrounded by, including, of course, your own. So who else is starring in this with you?
So Will Poulter stars as Bobby Jones.
I love Will
who
Poulter.
Who is just the kindest, another really kind, talented human being.
Can I say something about Will, please? Sorry to keep interrupting.
No,
I do apologise. I'm very enthusiastic. I'm very excited today, as you can tell.
I love it.
I think that if the next Bond film is an origin story, as it may have to be, that's all I'm saying about that. If it is an origin story, they could do a lot worse than Will Poulter as a young Bond.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first.
I just put it out there. Not that I know anything. Not
put it out into the universe.
Exactly, you know how manifestation works.
Oh, yeah.
Right, who else is in this with you?
Emma Thompson and Jim Broadbent play my parents.
Which is a right laugh.
Which is a really surreal sentence
And they
to
appear
say.
From nowhere.
They do. And
it's
they
like,
are,
hang on a minute, that's Jim Broadbent.
Yeah.
And then 5 seconds later, hang on a minute, that's Emma Thompson.
They are such a treat. And yeah, and watching that scene, I mean, Poulter and I just stood back and watched from the sidelines and it was just pure joy. And to watch them have so much fun with it as well was kind of infectious. It was great.
And of course, you know, that's the Hugh Laurie effect for you there,
yes.
isn't it? That's him going through his phone book and going,
yeah.
Emma,
yeah. You know,
are you busy? You know. Mm-hmm. Who else is in it?
Patrick Barlow is in it. Dannings.
I'm fishing, Conlith.
Oh, yeah, of course. Exactly. I mean, Conlith was the...
Conlith Hill is in this, my friend.
Sunshine of so many of our days. Will got so much more time with him than I did. But finally, when our days overlapped...
Is that before the thing happened?
The thing? Oh,
yeah, we can't. Yeah. I know we can't say that. Mm-hmm. But,
the spoiler.
Yeah. There are many spoilers that we could explode.
But he was so fun. That man is one of the funniest human beings.
But also, so you're filming this Agatha Christie movie, you know, and it starts off with Conlith and with Will, you know, their characters, that is, on a golf course, right? And you go, okay, I'm happy now. Because as a viewer, you've got to be comfortable, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, even you know, if later on the director and the writers and the geniuses that make all this stuff want you to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I suppose, actually, you've either got to be really uncomfortable or really comfortable. It's when you get caught in the middle at the beginning of the film, you go, I don't know where I am with this. And it starts off, and they're on this beautiful golf course. And you think, okay, I want to be in period with you guys. I want to be with you guys because you're both brilliant. And they happened to be on a golf course. And I was double screening yesterday because I was watching the Masters, right? So I had had golf live from Augusta, and I'm watching your thing, and I had yet more golf. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the golf, Luce.
You are welcome. You are welcome. Slightly different tone on this golf course, of course.
Yeah. But where was it? Where were you making this movie?
In Wales. So we started in Wales. It was half between Wales and the outskirts of London, but that was kind of on the cliff edge in Wales. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, whereabouts? Do you know which golf course it was?
Oh my God, don't ask me about my geography.
Because it's cool. I mean, it's like straight away, please, I want to be there. I want to be with these guys.
All right, I'll find out. I'll get back to you.
It starts with an act, talking of the cliff edge. You know, cliffs can be a bit too edgy for some characters in Agatha Christie novels.
Oh, indeed.
And one falls over, you know, one falls off the cliff. And then we think, is there something dastardly going on? Well, probably. It's an Agatha Christie novel. How much do we say about what ensues beyond that point?
Yeah, that's not too much of a spoiler. And Bobby Jones, Will's character, finds him. And this is where the dying man utters his last words. Why didn't they ask Evans?
Yeah.
Which then Bobby, I think, would be very happy to leave to the authorities to solve. But Frankie, my character, rolls back into town, and she kind of cajoles him to go on this adventure to get to the bottom of that.
And they've got a past, haven't they?
They do. They grew up together. So they're childhood friends, and now they're meeting again as adults. She's been living the society life in London. He was in the Navy, and they're now kind of reunited.
And it's beautiful because there's some inversion of snobbery going on in exchanges.
Yeah, and there's a definite class difference, which I think they weren't as aware of as kids, and now they're definitely being presented as adults because of the societal expectations. But there's that shorthand as well of only really seeing each other as they used to know, and then kind of obviously the encroaching pressures. But as with all of Agatha Christie's characters, I always say they're always written with such crisp intelligence and emotional intelligence. So it's really rewarding, I think, seeing that kind of brain operate this situation.
Lucy, anything you'd like to say to everybody listening before we bid you farewell and thank you?
Make sure to check out Why Didn't They Ask Evans next week, starting on the 14th.
God, she's very good. 14th of April on BritBox. Great to meet you, Lucy.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome back anytime. You're a complete joy to have around.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He'll be playing Tony Blair in The Crown later this year, but for now he's turning his attention to our old pal Donald. His new play, The 47th, is on right now at the Old Vic in London, so if you want to watch a man on stage doing a spectacular Trump, then look no further than the always brilliant Bertie Cobble!
How's your spectacular Trumping going, Bertie?
Oh, it's great. It's loud and, very full-bodied.
All right, come on. It sounds amazing. The more I read about it, the more hilarious I think it probably is, and also terrifying, and I'm not sure which way, because whenever you one is tempted to laugh at Trump, everybody laughs at him nervously because it could go either way. It could always go either way. It's called the 47th. Why is it called the 47th?
The 47th president of the United States will be elected in 2024, and this play imagines the run-up to that election. Mike Bartlett, who wrote it, wrote a play called King Charles III a few years ago, imagining Charles becoming king and what he might do as king in an iambic pentameter. For anyone who's done Shakespeare at GCSE, as I did, you know, you'll remember the iambic pentameter. It allows him to kind of treat these like really elevated, heightened scenarios, and like Shakespeare did with his history plays, sort of use dramatic license to kind of get inside the brains of those people. So yeah, it's imagining the American presidential election 2024, what might happen, and Donald Trump looms large as ever in that story, as does Kamala Harris, Ivanka Trump, and Biden, and others.
And they're all in there, so you have other actors on stage playing the other roles.
That's right, yeah. It's a big cast, actually, and amazing to be back in a live auditorium, you know, with a big cast play, with a full house. It's really quite exciting after the couple of years that we've
been. Right, so you're currently previewing.
That's right.
And you open this Friday.
Open this Friday. So previews essentially are, you know, an opportunity for us to rehearse and for the theatre to share that with an audience so we can sort of make changes based on what people are receiving and what we feel the house is doing. So it's still kind of all to play for, and we're just sharpening our
pencil. Yeah, because there's nowhere to hide in theatre, which is why you have these previews. It's what lots of other sort of lanes of entertainment should do but don't, because they don't have to see the whites of the eyes of the people that are there, but you do, and therefore you ensure yourselves as much as you can, don't
Very
you?
Much. Well, actually, interesting, one of the changes we made on Saturday was that in the rehearsal room, I have quite a lot of direct address to the audience, and in the rehearsal room, that was, you know, the matter of looking at somebody's eyes 6 feet away from me. Here, I'm blinded by the lights, quite literally. So the lighting designer made some tweaks to bring the house lights up a little bit in those moments so that we have that connection. And it's really important because, I mean, you know, the creative team are out there sitting, feeling what's happening to the audience, where they laugh, where they get lost, where they enjoy something that perhaps we could, you know, just lean into a bit more. And I can feel it on stage, but if you don't have that opportunity to make those subtle changes, then you don't necessarily get the, you know, the real dynamite that can happen when something's really
right. How did you go about your Trump?
I feel it's been brewing in all of us. You know, I feel like we've all been studying Mr. Trump for a long time, and I didn't have to do that much research as a consequence. Mike's written it's quite hard to write him, I think, because he does things that you couldn't make up. Mike is, I think, a brilliant dramatist, and has imagined things that are both hilarious and chillingly credible in terms of what could happen. How did I go about it? Well, I don't know. I just kind of close my eyes and imagine I'm that person, work out what that might feel like, and then do
it. You never give a straight answer to this. I will never stop asking this question, but they always say something like, well, you know. And I go, no, we don't know. We don't know how you're so good at your job. Gary Oldman was in here on Friday, said the same thing, right? But you do have this magic. Do you know what he said? He gave me one of the best responses. He said...
You're talking about one of my heroes, by the way, so...
Well, he's all our hero in different ways, isn't he? But he said, you know, if you want to something to be something, or you want to remember something, just forget everything else,
right,
and it shall appear.
I mean, that's probably why people are so elliptical in giving those answers, because I think if any of us really knew quite how we did something well, then, you know, you'd write the book and stop doing it. But it's elusive, isn't it? And but the other thing that's true is that I think basically I think, of course, one gives a lot of thought to, like, how do I... What is going to make it good? And you can get quite bound up in technique and in thinking, well, this is why it's good. And it can be quite constraining. And actually, with experience, you realise to just trust whatever it is, whatever alchemy, magic, talent it is, and just relax. Usually relaxation improves things. And so actually thinking too hard about how to do it is not helpful.
That's technical, though, isn't it? So that's like, that's a sort of general technical answer. But can you personify it with regards to the fact that it's Trump a little bit? Can you personify it a bit, that answer?
You mean, can I do him?
No, not at all. Oh. No, I mean the thinking behind doing him as opposed to somebody else.
I see.
It must be a little bit different.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of psychology, I suppose. And
is he a sociopath, do you think? You gone that far?
I don't... One of the things, this is not me pleading the fifth, although it sounds like it. one of the things I have learned to do is to never... acting is... It's not journalism, so you're not trying to be objective. It's deeply subjective. And I think I do have a sense of what I think of the man, but I'm trying not to judge him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to just imagine what it might feel like to be him. And then other people can judge him. The playwright can judge him. The director can judge him. The audience will judge him.
Or not, even.
Or not. And so I think, like, if I say out loud, yes, I think he is this, that, or the other. Harold Pinter used to say, if you want to know what my plays mean, come and watch the play.
Yeah.
I feel like that about my performances. I feel like I break something the minute I comment on it, which is why I'm so boring in interviews talking about it. Because if I say to you, this is who I think Donald Trump is, then there's no reason to come and see it.
I've read all the interviews, not all of them, but a lot of them about this. It sounds amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, brilliant.
But again, I'm just anxious hearing about it. What's people who are really good at the theatre come on this show and make me anxious about their shows, which I suppose is right in a way, isn't it? Because you take all that in there with you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well done, mate. Thanks for being here, Bertie.
Thanks for having me.
Bertie Carvel, the 47th starts in earnest this Friday. Any preview tickets available still?
Yeah, there's lots available, lots for the run. And but get them quick because I think they're going to go like hotcakes.
Okay. OldVicTheatre.com. All right. That's that.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
It's been a while since he was on the road, but we're pleased to report he'll be back at a theatre near you very soon. His new UK stand-up tour, Borderline, kicks off next month. So please welcome a comedian that's guaranteed to get some belly laughs out of Brexit. It's the brilliant Patrick Keelty!
Good morning, Patrick!
Good morning, lovely people, lovely people.
Patrick, it's so good to see you. You look so well, my friend.
I mean, this is what happens when you lock yourself in the house with two kids under five. Drink at five,
yeah,
and go to bed at seven.
And also marry one of the most wonderful women in the world. That does help, doesn't it?
The key to life is to find someone who's out of your league and convince them that they aren't. Is that not how it works?
Yeah, for long enough for them to marry you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, buyer's remorse. I don't have any. You need to ask her.
Well, I talked to her at length last year. You know that. And she I know she doesn't have any either. Patrick, it is great to see you. Am I remembering it correctly? Was it the first time we met backstage at Don't Forget Your Toothbrush?
I would have been a very small boy at that stage.
Is that right?
Yes, who didn't really know how TV worked but thought he did.
Was that the first time? Because I remember the meeting really well. Mm. I just don't remember if that was the first time we met.
That was the first time. And the great Stephen Stewart from Northern Ireland directed the show. And I remember going to see the show because Stephen was directing me in a little show in Belfast. And I sat in the back of the gallery and I'd never seen a show directed before. And Lulu was on. And you said, "Ladies and gentlemen, it's Lulu." And Stephen Stewart pushes the seat back and she goes, "Well." And Stephen Stewart goes, "You know, we make we one and two, coming to three and four and two, coming to four and two and five." And I said to Waheed, he was sitting beside me, I said, "What are those numbers?" He said, "They're the camera numbers." And the whole studio, I mean, that show, the country just vibrated from the
banging,
energy of that show.
But Stephen, one of the greatest directors of his generation, and still to this day. He started up his own TV company. I saw him a few years ago. What is he up to at the moment?
He still has that show. He's doing very nicely. He's just back from Turks and Caicos.
Right.
He needs no sympathy and lots of love. Stephen Stewart is doing very,
but
very
Steve,
well.
Steve, you are awesome. You certainly knew how to handle me, that's for sure. It was great. It was great. I felt very safe in his hands.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that... I don't know. You know when your life, when you don't know what you're doing, but you think you do, and Stephen Stewart's just the voice that you need on your shoulder to say, "It's going to be okay."
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? That's exactly right. You've nailed it. That's what you need. It's not what you think you need to hear, but it's... And he lets you carry on thinking you're knowing what you're doing whilst mopping up after you, preparing the ground before you, and then giving you a lovely velvet cushion should you fall over either side around you.
And then what happens is, a wee bit later in your life, you realise...
How good he was.
Yeah.
Because you can't make a TV show to save your life without him. I've no idea what he's talking about. Right, back to stand-up.
Yes.
So it's interesting because one of my first questions I was going to ask you is actually answered in the cheat sheet here.
Mm.
So the first stand-up tour from Paddy for ages.
By the way, can I ask you a question?
Sure you can.
Because there's a weekend of sport,
yes,
and the Masters
sir.
Is on.
Yes, sir.
Is this not a great guest for you on a Friday that you knew you didn't really have to prep me? You could actually just sit and watch the golf and you knew that you, me and you would just have a wee chat.
Yeah, well, we could talk about golf as well.
Yeah.
And we could talk about cricket.
All
and
of those things.
The Brayburn Stadium. We have lots of previous where that's concerned. But I was just looking forward to you coming in, to be honest, Paddy. Seriously, it's just nice to see you again. But Borderline is the name of Patrick's new UK tour. And I was going to say to you, you know, because you can go out and be funny whenever you like. No, I can't. Yes, you can. No, I can't. Yes, you can. And no, I know it takes loads of work, but you can. And you have, and you will, and you always do, and you're brilliant. So I was going to say, when do you decide to go out on a tour? Because you haven't been out on one for ages, but it's sort of answered within here. Family ties, family duties, priorities.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the last tour was what, sort of 6 years ago?
Yeah.
The boys are 6 and 4. No further questions, your witness.
That's it, it's as simple as that.
It's kind of as simple as that. And we were in America at the time, so if you wanted to do a stand-up tour, you know, you were saying, OK, I'm going to leave for 3 months. But the fact that we're back here now, people love to laugh at the weekends, means that you can just do... It's not really a tour, Chris. It's a series of mini break weekends.
This is what I was saying.
It's a series of mini breaks.
I was saying this to Russell Brand the other day. He's saying, well, like, you know, I'm on tour at the moment. I said, Russell, you're not on tour. You come back Monday through Thursday and you're having these mini breaks.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Essentially, what you do is you go to, you know, tell jokes on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, yep, and eat the food you want to.
That's the deal. That's what it is.
That's kind of what it is.
And hopefully make people laugh in between. Why is it called Borderline?
It's called Borderline because I grew up in Northern Ireland, close to the border.
Yep.
I wanted to write something about how the world looks at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up writing something about who I am and what my attitude was growing up,
mm-hmm,
how the place I grew up formed me. And when you come from Northern Ireland, I think there's a weird thing where in the back of your head, you always thought that you were a bad news story. Northern Ireland was a bad news story, and we didn't really have any lessons to tell the world. And when you see the world moving slightly polarized, and I think that what we do now is we like to sort of put people in boxes and we like to say, no, don't tell me who you are. I already know. So we make our opinions very quick. We're very binary in how we choose. You know, it's news, it's fake news, you're a Brexiteer, you're a Remainer. In Northern Ireland, we kind of did that for years. We basically just made our minds up about people before we even looked at them. I mean, Rachel will tell you, I mean, when we were growing up, we had a little thing where we were told that Catholics and Protestants' eyes were further apart.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
How you said the letter H.
How you said the letter H.
And you just, if you wanted to know, if you wanted to put somebody in that box, you just asked them what school they went to.
Yes. And so what we did was we lived in a binary society that didn't work. And then we did this amazing thing where we actually came together.
Oh, no.
And we made peace. And we made peace, yeah, by actually realising, ooh, that there's a middle ground.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to write something about actually coming from a place where we maybe did make progress, and maybe the world where it's going at the minute might be nice to listen to what we've been through.
No, I get it. I get it completely. Wow. That's why it's called Borderline, everyone. So where's the laughs?
Look, the laughs are always there. I mean, the laughs are always there about, you know, what it was like growing up there. I think that the best comedy always... Look, there's no point getting on stage unless you got something to say. And I think that the fun is actually people go to shows with preconceptions.
Yeah.
And the best comedy is a dance with the audience where you kind of unpick what your preconceptions are of them and they of you. And you give a little bit of yourself away and maybe they go away, you know, laughing at themselves and thinking, actually, no, oh, no, that is me. Oh, no, that is me. I didn't think that was me, but that's me.
All right, Paddy, thanks for being here.
Look, I mean, I loved it. Thank you.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He sold millions of records, has his own range of wine, and is a very good golfer. If only he put some effort in, he might just achieve something. Train's brand new single, AM Gold, is out now. So please hop on board as we punch his ticket and say, hey, soul mister, to the brilliant Pat Monahan.
Hey! Pat, good morning to you in San Francisco.
Yeah, good morning to you guys.
Oh, wow.
This has been such a pleasure listening to your show. I mean,
honestly,
you guys are so smart and you're talking about all the right stuff.
Tell me about that. Tell me what you mean by that.
First of all, I love the kooks.
Right.
And then you're talking about running television from a whole different atmosphere, which is all the right moves. Like, you have to do that.
Well, Pat, we're massive fans of you and your band. How long has your train been running for?
I mean, it seems like almost 30 years, like about 26 years now. So Drops of Jupiter just turned 21. Wow. And we're trying to find our way back to the UK after all this lockdown. And this is our way to do it.
Well, it's very cool, pal. It's very cool. I know you're embarking upon a US tour very soon. 35 dates and counting?
Yeah, I think about 45 dates. Trying to head into the UK in August.
All right, what can we do to help facilitate that?
Just talk about it. This is what we're doing.
It's a day of facilitation. That's what it is. So cool. So we're so excited this morning. So for the first half of the show, we just talked about golf because our headline sponsors are Sky and they broadcast the Masters live. You've played Augusta, mate. What was that? How did that happen? What was it like? La-di-da, ya-da-da.
I have a very dear friend who is a member, and it's been such a pleasure to be there. I can't even tell you how wonderful it is. And I was supposed to do a show for Mercedes, so I was going to be there this weekend, and then they canceled the show. So I traded in my Mercedes right away. I don't even have one, but I wanted to trade it in.
I didn't know that, because I knew you were supposed to play last year, but that didn't happen because of COVID. So why not this year? Or should we just not go there?
I don't know. I don't know why they canceled the show, but I think it had to do with the same kind of they didn't want people in close proximity. They wanted people to go to the event. And so I don't know why they canceled it, but here I am.
There's the whiff of some reasons there, I suppose. But you've played, because I've worked there. I've commented on it. Vassos, our co-host here, has commentated on it as well. You know, we've been on course. It's a great thing to commentate on. You're not allowed inside the ropes, of course, like at every other tournament you are when you commentate, but you're not at the Masters. It has all these great, kooky, unique rules. But to tee up there, I mean, what was that like, pal?
I mean, honestly, it's like nothing else I've ever experienced. It's it's if you like golf, it's the church of golf.
Yeah.
But if you don't like golf, then who cares? But if you do like it, it's like nothing else you've ever experienced in your life. It's the most beautiful course with the most wonderful gentlemen that you'd ever been around, or gentlewomen, and the course is. It plays like nothing else. The greens are impossible. Everything that you do is insanely difficult.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, one of the things when you're on tour as a band, it's what do you do before the show to stay out of trouble? And taking your golf clubs around the world with you is a handy idea, which you do, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I had a plan to go to Ireland and England to play in May, but this tour kind of interrupted things, so I have to do that, and then hopefully I'll be able to play maybe in the fall in the UK.
Yeah, because Glenn Frey of the Eagles, he did similar. He was renowned for his golf, and if he didn't have his stuff with him, he just bought new everything and then gave them to somebody at the course when he left.
That's cool.
He's renowned for that.
Well, I didn't know that, but I'll do that in the future.
Have you played with some fellow rock and rollers over the years?
I have. I played with some great musicians and some great pro golfers. My favorite pro golfer is Jason Day. He's the most wonderful guy you've ever met. And I also have hung out with Paul Casey, who's a great UK player who I hope wins the Masters this weekend. That'd be really fun to watch.
You sound so together, Pat. Thanks again for all that. You know, and you still enjoy a glass of wine, and you've been in rock and roll for, you know, three decades, probably more. This is just the train years we're talking about. You know, how have you held it together in what can be a turbulent and ultimately destructive career?
Yeah, it can be, actually. I started in a family where I was the youngest of seven, so they were like, yeah, you're not going to be some kind of guy that's not going to be cool. And then I met a wife, or met a woman who
somebody else's became wife. My wife.
I met somebody else's wife. I met a woman who became my wife, and she was like, yeah, I'm going to pass on the same thing as your mom, which is you're going to be a great human being first. Yeah. And so I'm trying to be that most and foremost. But I mean, what you guys are doing is so fun and so, I mean, I'm more blown away with your radio show than anything you could be blown away with my music. Okay. Believe me.
Well, you can't say that because then I can say that and you're wrong, Pat. Tell us about AM Gold.
Well, AM Gold is, I've worked on this record for so long. Like, we tried to put a record out before the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit. So we locked it down and tried to write more and more and more, and it just got better and better and better. So we made a record that was like a throwback album, like the AM Gold compilation records that are like part A and B or R&B and part disco and singer-songwriter and all the varieties of music that you get. And so that's what this record is. And AM Gold is the disco version. And so the next song you'll get is like a slow heartbreak, you know, R&B song. And then it will go on from there.
Okay, so AM Gold is the title track of the album, as well as, of course, being the new single. That is out now. The album is out on Friday, the 20th of May. Do us a favour, send us a bottle of your wine and let me hear your album up front so I can rave about it. Would that be okay?
I would love that. I would love to send you that. I mean, honestly, if anybody deserves that, you do.
Pat, it's just a joy to talk to you. It was my birthday last Friday, but I feel like it's my birthday today. And you're my birthday gift. Pat, have a great rest of the night, morning over there in Seattle, and please don't be a stranger. Thank you so much.
Great, thanks. I can't wait to see you guys.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, we've heard from a bunch of beautiful guests already, but still to come, the homebody Kevin MacLeod tells us what to expect from Grand Designs Live 2022. Former Nike Chief Marketing Officer Greg Hoffman was live on the line from Portland, Oregon, taking us on his professional journey with tales from his new book, Emotion by Design. Awesome adventure and super nice guy, Danny Bent looks ahead to this summer's Run Fest Run, and the oh-so-present Laura Brand shares amazing ideas from her new book, The Joy Journal for Grown-Ups, 50 homemade craft ideas to inspire creativity and connection. Plus, Sky Sports F1's Crofty gets us revved up ahead of the Australian Grand Prix, live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1. Right, let's get back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
If you can see the budget spiralling and know that the windows just won't make it from Germany in time, then the next guest is just for you. Grand Designs Live is back at London's Excel later this month, so please welcome a man that'll have you on McLeod 9 in no time. It's the one and only Kevin MacLeod!
Good morning, Kevin!
Good morning, Chris.
Grand Designs Live. Grand Designs Live is back again. GrandDesignsLive.com. What's new on the block this year, Kevin?
Oh, blimey. Well, there's a whole new part of the exhibition called Green Living Live. There you go. And it's a sort of, we've just taken all the best of the green stuff and put it in one place and then added at the middle of it a house. So we've got a low carbon house that we've built, which is sort of quite, I suppose it's quite timely, isn't it, at the moment, given the, you know, cost of heating and energies. This is a house which exports energy rather than sort of consumes it, you know?
Yeah, what about energy-saving housing on a grand scale, which obviously you've been involved with in the past, are still involved with now? You know, I mean, it's long-term planning, which isn't very popular because, obviously, we have elections every 5 years and, you know, opposition has to be that and, you know, government has to be the other. Where are we? Who's leading the charge here? Which country can we look to for inspiration and proof that this is the sensible way to go?
Oh, Denmark, Germany, Sweden, Austria, Norway, right. Holland. Yeah, and I mean, you know, all these North European countries which have got their act together in terms of not just really, really low energy housing that's super insulated, but also which is kind of on things like district heating systems, you know, where people share resources. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's kind of the whole cost of life is cheaper as a result.
See, what is it about the Northern European territory, you know, which excels when it comes to what's good for the community and human beings as opposed to the non-human beings, other things, whether it's schooling, whether it's, you know, like education, whether it's redistribution of wealth or equal distribution of wealth or decent housing?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be contentious here and say that, without getting too serious, that the British model is the open market model. We just love, don't we? You know, the moment sometimes he says, I'm going to sell you some apples, you know, immediately there are 55 separate companies trying to sell you apples, you know, all in competition with each other. And it's the same with energy and housing. I mean, it's kind of, yeah, we love a competitive market. And I think so many countries that are politically driven with these strong agendas, and they're really important though, aren't they? I mean, they tend to be a bit more top down, you know, the government is slightly more in control. And I'm not suggesting that we should be renationalizing everything, but But actually, I think when it comes to things like housing, we don't just need policies, we also need leadership. How about that?
Yeah, and long-termism, which sort of goes against everything we not stand for, but everything we're sort of strategized for. But what is it about the geographical clustering of these like-minded countries?
Well, they're all in Northern Europe where it gets cold. I think that's the answer.
Is it as simple as that?
You know, I think it is. I think Canada's quite good too for this reason. You know, they kind of really
address
the issues.
Because they sort of have to be.
Yeah, they have to be. Yeah, yeah, because otherwise people would bankrupt themselves trying to stay warm, you know, in winter.
Oh, Kevin.
I know. And you know, it's not just... I mean, I visited a house in Finland a few years ago, which was built in the 1600s, and it had... It was insulated with moss, sheep's wool and felt in the walls. It was brilliant. The whole house was built from, like, stuff within about 50 metres. And yet it was one of the warmest, snuggest buildings I've ever been to, you know? And it was 400 years old.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it entirely. I used to have a lovely house that was so, the stone was so thick, cool in the winter, warm in the winter, cool in the summer. Like it had its own sort of microclimate going on. It was so sorted. Kevin, what about ice baths and houses?
What about them?
And outdoor saunas and plunge pools and hot tubs.
Oh, you mean all that stuff?
Tell us about this.
I like a bit of that because, I mean, a few years ago I went to the Arctic Circle to make a programme about a family living there and stayed with them for 2 weeks. And, yeah, we built a mobile sauna while we were there, which is brilliant. And what they do up in Finland is that they don't, and just northern Sweden, if they haven't got any water because everything freezes over in winter, what they do is go into the sauna, like, steam up and then run out and fall literally into the snow.
Yeah.
And they said, go on, try it. I jumped out of the sauna, absolutely naked, ran down the steps. And the night before there'd been a thaw and then it had refrozen. So I fell over. I went smack onto just a great big sheet of ice.
Harder than concrete.
Cut my nose open and sprained my ankle.
So you're not doing that again. Right, here's a phrase for you. Three words that may well cause your blood to run cold. Supply chain issues.
Yeah. Supply chain. What a lovely thing. The supply chain's fallen off my building bicycle. There we go. That right now, things are... I mean, I think the price of timber's doubled, the price of steel has tripled in 2 years.
Yeah.
I can't keep up. And you can't get some stuff, you know. So even if you want to buy it, you know, and you've got the money, you still can't get hold of...
Fence panels. Things. We've been waiting for fence panels since the storm. We can't get them. We've got the fencer. We've got, you know, he's got his ability and his tools. He can't get the panels. Still.
The best thing I heard was plasterboard, and they couldn't make plasterboard, not because they didn't have any plaster, but because they didn't have the paper to put on the plasterboard.
That's crazy, isn't it? So how is this going to affect Grand Designs when it comes back on the air? Because, you know, projects often overrun anyhow. This is a sort of unwelcome curveball into the mix, isn't it, I would imagine?
Yeah, but then you get people building their own fence panels, you know, and plastering their own walls with mud and just making do and mending and buying stuff on the internet for no money at all, and you know, and sort of just finding ways around it. And I think it's kind of, I love it. I mean, I remember in the last recession, you know, people said, oh, it's going to be so difficult and hard and tough for people to finish. Yes, but on the other hand, when people just spend their way out of a hole, that's not good design, you know. When they think their way out of the hole creatively, that's more fun.
Kevin, good luck with everything. I love you. You know where we are, and we're always here for you, okay?
Yeah, lovely to speak.
Cheers, pal. Good to talk. Bye. GrandDesignLive.com. If you've never been before, you should go, because it is absolutely awesome. It's the XL, 30th of April. That's a Saturday to Friday, 8th of May.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
There's a disturbance in the Formula One force at the moment as Lewis Hamilton isn't winning everything. Will order be restored? Well, this weekend, the Australian Grand Prix is live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1, so you can find out. Ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to commentary, there's nothing he can't didgeridoo. It's Crofty!
Oh, that's good. That was good, wasn't it? He just gets better and better.
He's been working on that.
Yeah, he's
been seriously. I'm going to have to raise my game with that intro.
No, you're fine, Crofty. It's just Vassos we need to worry about. Well, it's all going off, isn't it? It's all. We couldn't have had two more feisty opening Grand Prix. We know that Mercedes are lagging behind the sort of front runners. They're still very much in contention for points and things like that, but it's all about Verstappen and Leclerc.
Yeah, that's the new battle this year, isn't it? Welcome, yep, everybody, from Australia, where it is 16:53 precisely.
Thank you.
It's middle of the night, as far as I'm concerned. I'm still not over the jet lag. And I don't think I've got over the start of this season either, because everything has changed, as you said. Nice to see Red Bull getting their first points on the board in the last race. Nice to see Ferrari still up there. Would be lovely to see Mercedes joining them as well. But I rather get the feeling we're going to have to wait until maybe after Miami, maybe Spain, to see the best of that Mercedes. They've come here with exactly the same car as they had in Jeddah. So Lewis Hamilton's chances of a win this weekend? Short answer, none. Long answer, only if a few other cars retire. But at least Lewis isn't Daniel Ricciardo, who I think has got an even worse job in his home Grand Prix.
Well, yeah, I know he has, but he's pretty chipper going into it, you know, and that is Daniel all over. I know he's not always, that's not always his disposition, but he's very excited to be going home, we hear. Ticket sales are nuts, that's official. Also, there's a lovely local Aussie non-profit on the side of the car for McLaren this year.
That's right. I think McLaren are very good at that, bringing lots of new partners into Formula One as well, and also getting together with charities. They've been doing a lot with mental health charities in mind, haven't they, in the last few years as well. But the reason why it's nuts down here for tickets, it's 1,118 days since we last raced here in Albert Park. It's 656 days since they locked the gates and no one could come in. And this festival of motorsport that is the Australian Grand Prix cannot wait to get going. Honestly, wherever we walk in this city, people are so excited to see Formula One back here again. Nothing like it.
Yeah, and often we talk about upgrades with the cars, don't we? But there's been upgrades with the circuit itself.
Oh, yeah. Turns 1, 3, 6, 11 and 13 have all been widened, which is good because the cars are very wide these days. Opening up the apex, hopefully give us a bit more overtaking. They've got rid of the 9 and 10 chicane, which is a bit of a shame, really, because that generates mistakes and often leads to incidents. But what that has also done by getting rid of that chicane is made the track an awful lot faster. So the little flick that used to be, or the left-hand, right-hand flick at 11 and 12 is now 9 and 10, is going to be epic to watch. We've got four DRS zones as well. So we've got a bit of a tactical battle going on with DRS this year and when to get in front and when to just hang back. So that'll add an extra bit of spice to the occasion. But it will be fast. Hopefully it won't get too furious and we'll get lots of overtaking on the track. That's what all these changes have been designed to do, and it needs it because we haven't had enough overtaking in Australia to match the fever pitch excitement that goes with this race.
All right, well, we shall see. I have only great hopes for this Sunday and the whole weekend. However, you're suffering from jet lag. We are in danger, and we don't mind, by the way, it's kind of danger. Welcome. We're in danger of suffering from Sky Sports lag this weekend because
what a Sunday, eh?
I know, but you kick off on Sunday at 6 a.m, right? You say what a Sunday, but yeah, we'll still be up watching the Masters on Saturday night.
Oh yeah,
Sunday morning. So we it's not an all night; it's an all weekend. We're going to have to pull this weekend.
Quite. I'm looking at Cam Smith, maybe Justin as well for the Masters, or DJ for the Masters. That's the kind of driving I have no expert knowledge in whatsoever. But the Masters is the culmination of a brilliant weekend of sport and a special Sunday as well. Starting off with the Grand Prix, and if you do oversleep and if you don't get up in time, don't worry. We're going to totally rerun the race all over again before Liverpool and Manchester City, which is just the little filling in the driving sandwich here. Starting off in Albert Park, ending with the Masters, top of the Premier League in between. Sky Sports has got it all covered this weekend. And as for a winner of the race here, I rather get the feeling Max Verstappen, for the first time in Australia, is the man to be caught. But Ferrari are snapping away at his heels and they won't be giving up any advantage that easily. Leclerc leads the championship. Verstappen is on a mission.
Yeah, but Leclerc is a much cooler cat. Verstappen sometimes is his own worst enemy. Carlos Sainz is a cool cat. They get on well. You know, it seems to be a very happy time, a happy sort of incarnation at Ferrari at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. And look, here's a bit of useless Formula One trivia for you. Mm-hmm. Carlos Sainz could become this weekend, should something happen to Verstappen and Leclerc, and if Sainz doesn't win the race, say he comes second or third, could become the first driver since Jean Vera back in 1956 to lead the championship without ever winning a race.
Love it.
You can discuss that at your leisure as you recover from the Grand Prix and look forward to the football.
All right, mate. Lots of love out there. What's the weather like?
What's the weather like? Beautiful. The sun is just setting somewhere over Bruce's mother's at the moment.
We're so pleased for you.
It's been about 27 degrees today, to be fair. I was playing a lovely round of golf at Kingston Heath yesterday, and you know, it got quite hot after a while. Got really hot in the last hole when Simon Lazenby lipped out and I managed to beat him. Didn't want to mention that, but as you brought it up.
Yeah, okay. And you're getting paid for all this. You get paid as well, yes?
Yes. Wow. Yes, it is vocation, not vacation.
Some,
but, you know,
some kind of job.
Occasionally, Chris.
Some kind of job. David Croft and the team from Sky Sports F1 all over your tellies this weekend, along with the footy in the Premiership, also on Sky Sports. And, of course, the Masters from 2 p.m. live today, Sky Sports Golf.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From sleeping in a van outside the office to going toe-to-toe with the greatest athletes on earth, our next guest has been on quite a journey. His new book, Emotion by Design, is out today. So please welcome a man that always strives for smooth sailing on board his leadership. It's Greg Hoffman!
Good morning, Greg!
Good morning. Thanks for that Billy Ocean intro. That was great.
By the way, that is some bookshelf. We thought you were in a bookstore, but that's in your house, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a bit of a book obsession, so it makes sense that I'd write a book, I guess.
Well, what a book. Emotion by Design. Couldn't put it down yesterday. Creative leadership lessons from a life at Nike. Literally, you know, a one-company guy until a couple of years ago from your late teens. I would say, how did it all happen? It's all in the book, of course, but what a story. I've got to say, I finished reading your book yesterday, Greg, and I thought, okay, I'm going to watch something which is a little less taxing. I'm going to put something on. So I put on episode 5 of Winning Time, the story of the rise of the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I couldn't
get a show.
I know, but I couldn't get away from Nike because that's the episode in which Magic Johnson goes to this sort of expo and Phil Knight chases him around the building trying to get him to sign a sponsorship deal with Nike.
That's right. Well, it's storytelling, and I'm sure there's some truth within that. But I got to tell you, I'm fascinated with that that show, and certainly relates to this idea of emotion by design, right? Engage viewers in story, and
100%, yeah. And the big endorsements, you know, professional endorsements of Nike products, you know, Nike trailblazed that kind of ethos and still does to this day. And you rose to the heights of being in charge of Nike's global imaging. I mean, that is something, you know. Please tell the story of, you know, what you were doing at college, the fact that it wasn't even you who contacted Nike first, it was a pal of yours, and then what happened next?
Well, yeah, I was introduced to the idea of a Nike internship by a friend of mine who I was in college with, who was a sneakerhead, you know, drew shoes all the time. And so I decided to sign up for it. And it was my senior year in college, and I sent my portfolio off to this place in Oregon. I was from Minnesota, far away from that. And lo and behold, I get this internship. And the problem is, I graduate college, I'm broke, but my parents borrowed me their van. So I drove the van 27 hours across America and showed up to the only address I knew, which was Nike. But the problem was, is the internship was still 3 to 4 days away. So I just slept in the van in the parking lot and waited to that first day, because I had to meet people to understand, you know, where was I going to live and how was I going to live? But ultimately, that kind of kicked off this incredible run and the ability to collaborate with all these incredible athletes and teammates, and put so many different concepts and inspire so many people from around the world.
Just give us, if you don't mind, the highlights of your own sort of personal Nike Hall of Fame of names we will have heard of that you have collaborated with in your career.
Well, certainly starting with the late, great Kobe Bryant, just an incredible partner. Whether you were creating a product or a story, he was so curious and he was always sharing his inspiration. And certainly, if you watch the Kobe system commercial, he also knew how to poke fun of himself as well. And of course, there's LeBron, and watching LeBron grow, not only as a player, but a human being, and working with him to express his personality through his product and his commercials was just amazing. And now look what he's doing in terms of using his platform and his voice to really have an impact in society. And, you know, I would even throw in Kevin Hart, spent time with Kevin Hart. And what people may not know is he brought running and training to the masses, literally created a movement about movement. So he's just obsessed with fitness, and he does it with humor. And then finally, I would just say Colin Kaepernick and just the impact he's made, not only in the U.S. and in the world, and also the sacrifice, the professional sacrifice he's made when he took a knee years ago. So those are just some of the key players in this kind of journey that I was on, and individuals that I still draw inspiration from on a daily basis.
Yeah, and you know, the book is called, of course it is, Emotion by Design, and the last lines of the book itself are, be human, design emotion, and leave your legacy. And you know, it's all about the personification of what would otherwise be an inanimate object until, for example, a pair of human feet slip into whatever running shoes or sneakers we might be talking about. And if you do personify things via actual people, you also therefore have to take on their values. And the book sort of transitions more towards that towards the end, which is I love it. I love the way you hold us by, you take us by the hand, and you lead us through your story, your adventure, your experiences, and your revelations within your own biography.
Well, thank you for that, and it is true. I mean, to make an impact in the world and truly change it for the better, you do have to kind of resonate in the deepest way possible with your audience and within culture. And when you can do that and you can move people to act against some of the most pressing issues of our time, it's not only gratifying to work for a brand and with teammates like that, but that's when you start kind of transcending your products, right? And truly leaving a legacy as a brand.
And do you have one sort of cherished item, Nike item, or a pair of boots or shoes or sneakers or something like that, like an original waffle sole? You know, if your house caught fire, and I hope it never does, and you were to rescue one Nike product, what might it be?
Well, I have a collection of Air Jordan 3s.
Oh my goodness.
Right? And those I would have to run back into the house.
Yes.
And try to grab all of them.
Yes.
And run back out.
And they'd pay for your new house, which is fine.
There you go.
Greg, great to talk to you, man. Thanks for staying up so late. Have a lovely day, and well done on an amazing book. By the way, what do you think of your own front cover as a graphic designer?
Yeah, you know, it's well, I'm learning that each country is a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
That the U.S. cover has a pair of abstract Air Force Ones, and the UK cover did a nod to the swoosh, and I love the green Volt color.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about jumping off the shelves.
Yeah, good. All right. Now, if you do read this book, you need to have a laptop or some kind of intelligent device next to you, because you need to Google all the images he talks about and all the films that he talks about. Greg, goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Dabba Dave, who is next on this, this whatever this is?
From organising the longest relay of all time to writing best-selling books, our next guest has been there and run it. He's spreading the joy at Runfest Run next month. So put on your running shoes, put a smile on your face, and welcome the shiny, happy person that goes by the name of Danny Bent.
All right, Danny.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's wicked to be here.
You're very welcome, mate. You're very welcome. So you've been voted as one of the 100 happiest people in the UK. How did that work?
It's all about... It's more about what you do for other people, the happiness you bring to other people.
Got it.
I do all this stuff that kind of raises money for charity or just brings people together into communities. But then it's also that kind of... The way you come across, I guess.
Yeah.
And
well, you have literally skipped in here today. And we thought, what if he comes in really grumpy? You know, a terrible journey in on the tube. It's been a bit of a week. But none of that. You are what we wanted.
You can't walk into this studio and not be happy. I'm meeting you, Vassos, the team. It's just super awesome.
Yeah, well, it's... it's not like that every day, is it? Yeah, it is!
Yeah,
it is. So high-pitched. Danny, so I hear that you ran the Manchester Marathon on Sunday without training, and you finished it in 3 hours, 2 minutes. A, is that true? B, if it is true, how did that happen?
I think there's some Chinese whispers. I do some training, but just over the winter, it's been one of those, you know, everyone's just been getting sick over and over again. You get a cold, then you get COVID, then you get another cold, then you get a cough.
Yeah.
So I've just not really been doing any proper training.
Right.
And then I just set off and I was just like, I'm just going to enjoy it. And I think that just took all that pressure off.
And fresh legs as well, maybe.
Yeah, fresh legs a little bit. Yeah. But I just had a burger and chips the night before. I was like, let's just do whatever I want to do.
See, now, I get that, because you could sort of eat what you want, you know, within reason the night before. But if I ate a burger and chips, I'd get a lot of acid reflux with that.
I had a moment that there was a bit of a churn in the stomach, and I thought this could get messy, and just luckily that passed.
All right, so 3 hours 2 means you qualify now for Boston almost by accident.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So are you going to go to Boston?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to Boston. I organised a relay from LA to Boston 10 years ago now. It was 9 years ago. And we raised £600,000 for the people affected by the bombings in Boston. And it's the 10th year anniversary next year of the bombings going off and us doing this. And now I'm going to be running in Boston. I feel like crying. It feels like the universe is at work and just made something happen. I shouldn't have done that time. Well, I shouldn't have qualified.
But the more you load your flywheel, the better things happen, because they sort of can't not, in a way. I mean, you know, but something unfortunate will happen. Somebody will get sick somewhere, but you know, or something else might happen. But basically what you're doing is, if you sow enough seeds in the right field, you get the flowers, don't you?
That is, I just believe in that. Absolutely. I just do it all over the place. Just do as much as positivity as you can, it kind of flows back to you. And
spread
all that
your seeds
stuff.
Of joy, pal. How does one organise a relay from LA to Boston? What does that mean?
So I broke 3,000 miles up into 10-mile segments.
Right.
And then just popped it out on social media and said, put it on a website, popped it out on social media and said, do you want to sign up? And the American people all they just got so behind it.
Really?
And so it was carried non-stop from LA to Boston through like thunderous lightning storms and through 50 degree heat, and those passings of the baton get more important every time they happen, and people would see that baton coming towards them, knowing it's their turn, it's their responsibility, this 10 miles is on them, and they'd burst into tears just seeing the baton come round the corner. And the real beauty of it is the way it brings people together. Like, we all know what's been going on in America, and it just didn't matter. Like, whoever was holding that baton was giving that person a hug, passing the baton and going on.
It's
brilliant.
It's so important, isn't it? It's brilliant. It's what you do is fantastic. And you're off to Nepal on Thursday. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I do loads of adventures all over the place. I've done kind of solo things. And you come back from solo adventures and you can talk to a mate about it for 5 minutes before they're bored. Whereas I just realised that if I wanted to talk about these things more, I needed to take people with me. So I just stick it out on social media, say I'm going to climb in Mount Makalu. And I got 20 people join me. And so we're all going and having a experience.
Mate, I know you don't currently have a partner, you don't have a family, but and you're making the most of that position, because that position could change at any moment, and we're in different situations, but we're very happy with our lot as well. But you know, if you are free, you've got to make the most of it, haven't you?
I absolutely agree. Yeah, make the most of every single
and
moment.
And you're all free in our own different ways, yeah. I suppose.
And
you know,
and you also, like, we all experience, like, I'm sure we've all, I've had one of my good friends pass last year, and I'm just like, now I'm living for him as well. And I'm just like, I'm doubling down on everything, so that's just the way I am.
Good for you, pal. All right, so you're at Runfest Run. So how big on social media are you then? What are you, Instagram, are you Snapchat, are you all everything?
Yeah, I mean,
what are you on? Tell us what you're on.
I'm on Instagram, Danny_Bent, and Facebook. I've just started rapping about my run. So I actually was recording raps as I was going along the marathon, still managed 302. So I've started putting them on a few other ones as well. But I'm on it all, but I'm not like, I'm definitely not massive at all.
But you must have a certain amount of natural fitness, because Vassos, who's really brilliant at running and has run loads of different things. I mean, you know, when you break three hours for a marathon, you're pretty chuffed, aren't you?
No, beyond chuffed.
Right.
I mean, that's the holy grail. Manchester is one of those marathons. I once ran 3:01, I think it was, in Manchester, and without really trying. It's the sort of marathon, because it's fast, it's very flat, but it's very friendly, and you sort of get filled with that sort of joy running round, and then you suddenly go, oh my goodness, that was really quick.
Yeah, there's a magic. The support was absolutely magic. It wasn't like London, it wasn't the big noise, but there was just something really like, we're lifting you, we're going to keep moving you forward.
Almost
like that.
A cooler vibe, if you like.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah.
Is it very well attended then?
Yeah. Masses of runners, masses of support.
Fourth biggest in Europe now, Manchester.
No, I know from an entry point of view, but I meant from a spectator point of view.
Yeah, it felt like there were people the whole way. It really did.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do for us at Runfest Run, my friend? My new best friend. I like you, Danny Bent. You're all right, pal.
So good. So I'm on the main stage. I'm going to be introducing the likes of Paul, Steve Cram. I'm going to be doing the warm-ups for the runs. Hopefully, I'm going to be able to jump off that stage at some point and do a few runs with people and chat to people along the way. And I mean, really, the things I'm looking forward to most is just getting all those runners together. We all know it's an amazing community. We're all so supportive of each other. And getting out there. And the band, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Top Loader.
Yeah, Basement Jazz.
Man, we are going to be having some serious fun. Can't wait.
Good for you. Well, you're the man. You're the man for it. It's great to meet you, pal.
Oh, thanks,
Chris. You're awesome. Where can people find you again?
Instagram, Danny_Bent.
All right. Runfest Run. Go to runfestrun.co.uk for tickets to spend a weekend with people as inspiring and collectively hugely inspiring as this man, Danny Bent, who we've fallen in love with this morning. Cheers, Danny. You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
She's spreading smiles across the world one jam jar candle at a time, and you can join her in jubilation. Her latest book, The Joy Journal for Grown-Ups, is out now, so please join us as we welcome a lady for whom creativity is very on brand. In fact, it's very on Laura Brand!
Yeah, Laura Loza!
Oh, thank you. What a welcome. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Chris.
Congratulations with this book. It's the second in what could be like 100, I suppose. Your first one was the Joy Journal of Magical Everyday Play for Kids.
That was for kids. Yeah.
And it was a Sunday Times bestseller, as this one already is. This book is fantastic. That book was awesome. You do talk about the fact you didn't get to celebrate it because of the pandemic, but the book was celebrated by lots of people who bought it.
Yes, it was. I mean, to be honest, yeah, I was writing that, the Joy Journal for Magical Everyday Play, in the 2 years preceding the pandemic. So for me, when it was going to be released at that time, I was sort of like, wow, I can't believe this. This is a book about how to make crafts with what you've got in the house and home. And everyone's at home, and I'm trying to what to say, but it was really, I got such a good response, and the Instagram sort of community really came together. So even though I didn't have a launch or celebrate it in any specific way with interviews or anything like that, other than podcasts, which were amazing, there was an apparent community of parents, and that made me feel very much motivated to immediately start writing other ones.
Well, so, you know, every cloud and all that, and there were many silver linings, and there continue to be many silver linings to what was, you know, otherwise horrible, and continues to be horrible as far as COVID is concerned. But this familial getting together, families really, you know, reconnecting and getting to know each other in the old-fashioned way, I suppose.
Yeah, do you know what? You said something earlier about Channel 4, actually. You said nostalgia's powerful. And when I was writing the kids' book, I was doing these activities with my children, and I was feeling the nostalgia of doing them myself when I was little. And to be honest, homemade Play-Doh, you know, flour and oil and salt, and it's had that smell. Again, I call it nostalgic in the
smell
first book.
Smell is a big thing, isn't it?
It's massively. And what I wanted with this book as well, was exact same thing, was I wanted to conjure a sort of sense of nostalgia in kind of, you know, us, adult, grown-up people who sort of still want to play, and you know, it's sort of, yeah, that's so nostalgia is a really important element of it, and that going back to traditional stuff we might have done with our grandmothers or mums, and doing it again now.
And the launch of this book couldn't be more different from your first book, because on Sunday it was just this celebration, this explosion, this rainbow of joy. And we had this gorgeous sunny day.
A couple of days
before, it was blizzard. You know, we had the blizzards. We had like 3 or 4 blizzards on Thursday afternoon, I think, where we live.
I know, we did.
Sunday was stunning, and the turnout was unbelievable. I know that lots of people who tried to come later had to just carry on driving. No bad thing, by the way, in the particular valley that we're referring to, but because they couldn't park anywhere. And you did bring the book to life, probably more than you imagined you might.
Totally. I mean, like, yeah, I do you know what? I love pulling together. Again, it's something I talk about in this book. I love pulling together people's sort of skill set. So there were people making flower garlands, there was kids' crafts in the garden, so things from my first book. And then I'd set up inside an indoor, a long table with still life and painting materials. And I was encouraging people, come in, go and get yourself a drink, have a snack, and try and do a bit of still life painting. Most people immediately feel like, oh no, I'm not touching art materials, I can't paint. So I sort of, my whole real, my passion is to try and encourage people, even beginners, to have a go and find that creativity within themselves and be okay with being a beginner. And that was what I think was apparent. People were coming up to me at the end, you know, women older than me, same age as me, saying like, I've done this painting, I'm quite pleased with it, I'm going to take it home. It did. Thanks for saying it came to life.
But it's really infectious, isn't it?
I hope so. I think the reason that joy is such a... joy is a thing that is a comforting feeling, but also it is infectious. It's a feeling that you can sort of, if you are a joyful, you know, when you've met a joyful person, you feel, you kind of can't help but smile. And so I hope things in this book and the day on Sunday, thank you for saying, created a joyful effect.
And there's this new venue which you seem to have chanced upon. And we could talk about it more. We won't specify it now. But that is, you should do that there all the time, because I know people will come, build it and they will come.
I know.
And it honestly... families, mums, you know, you could do it for free some days, then people could pay for other days and fund the free days. It's waiting to happen. That is heaven sent. You have been given that venue, you and Russell, for a reason. And I'm sure you're aware of all. I'm sure you sort of feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, thank you for your enthusiasm. That's so amazing, because, sometimes you can get sort of overwhelmed with ideas and think, oh, this is space and I'm going to do workshops and I'm going to... And you sort of go, right, where do I start? And actually, maybe Sunday was the start of that. I've already been doing festivals and workshops for children originally, and now moving into the kind of grown-up space.
It's the same,
except for a different layer of insecurity. So children generally just have a go and they don't care about the outcome. They're much more into the process. There's something very, very interesting, and it's the thing that I'm continually trying to kind of go further into, is that some of us have lost the art of play and certainly are much more self-critical than we need be. So I hope that through these sort of simple, easy crafts, there's an entry point for a lot of people that might otherwise find themselves underconfident.
And I think there's a temporary separation, but there's a permanent non-separation. There's a permanent same place for joy to happen. We could go through loads of the making these, but just get the book, everybody. Just get this book in your house and in your life for everybody that you love. It's called The Joy Journal for Grown-Ups. It's already a Sunday Times bestseller, as was the first one, and there'll be many more. But, you know, all in good time, because that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your generosity today, having me on. Thank you both. And I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.